From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the state revenue numbers are in, and Texas has a budget surplus.
While the Texas economic picture is certainly much different today than when I addressed you here 2 years ago, that does not mean there are no clouds on the horizon.
Governor Perry says not to worry about restoring those old budget cuts, but how about a tax cut?
Now, trust me when I tell you that there are interests all across the state who view Monday's revenue estimate as the equivalent of ringing the dinner bell.
And are Texas gun lovers over a barrel when it comes to gun control?
We're making the gun the fault. And the gun did not create the situation.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The Texas legislature is back in business, and business is good. At the start of the week, they were given the news by the state comptroller, Susan Combs, that the state's biennial revenue estimate is healthy.
When you add the numbers, the general revenue available for certification in 2014-15 is $101.4 billion.
That's how much is available for general purpose spending during the 2014-2015 biennium.
Robust revenue collections driven forward strongly by a recovering Texas economy and led by sales taxes will result in a budget surplus at the end of the current 2012-2013 biennium.
The state's general revenue collections from taxes, fees, and other income is estimated to be $96.2 billion for the 2014-15 biennium, of which about $3.6 billion would be set aside for future transfers to the Rainy Day Fund.
The outlook that I am releasing today for both state revenue and the economic picture is for continuing expansion as the fast growth period of an economic recovery gives way to a moderate, sustained growth.
This gives Texas an $8.8 billion surplus, compared to 2 years ago when there was a $27 billion shortfall. But Combs left the podium with a word of warning. Just because the budget looks bright today doesn't mean that we won't be back in dark red later.
We would all do well to remember the dramatic drop in revenues that occurred during the recession, just as we recognize the dramatic and sharp increase that's happened recently.
The day after Combs gave the state revenue estimate, the 83rd legislature convened, with Governor Rick Perry delivering the opening remarks. He surprised some lawmakers and irritated others when he suggested the surplus in the state budget shouldn't be used to restore the cuts from the last budget, but to make tax cuts. KERA's Shelley Koffler has more on what the governor had to say on the legislature's first day of business.
The first day of a legislative session is usually lighthearted and ceremonial. Spouses, grandchildren, and friends dressed to the nines surround the lawmakers as they take their oaths of office. Governor Rick Perry struck that easygoing tone when he first appeared in the Texas Senate. He singled out Rick Santorum, one of his opponents for the Republican presidential nomination. Santorum was in the chamber for the swearing-in of a friend, Senator Ken Paxton of McKinney.
We had a little bit of fun with Rick in the office this morning. My son presented him a sweater vest, Texas A&M sweater vest. So wear it with pride, Senator.
Then, striking a more serious tone, Perry warned lawmakers against ideas they may have for spending the estimated $9 billion budget surplus expected this year.
We've got to control this appetite for more spending.
And the additional $8 to $10 billion in oil and gas tax money expected to accumulate in the state's rainy day savings account.
Now, trust me when I tell you that there are interests all across the state who view Monday's revenue estimate as the equivalent of ringing the dinner bell. And they look at it as manna falling from heaven. And they have all of y'all's addresses and phone numbers.
Instead of spending the available money, Perry suggested lawmakers use it to provide tax relief, a message that surprised some, considering the deficit 2 years ago that led to layoffs and deep cuts for just about every state program. Senate Democrat John Whitmire of Houston couldn't contain himself.
Well, I don't think we have a surplus. You know, if you don't pay your bills, of course you can be running a so-called surplus. We should have spent more 2 years ago. We had the money in a rainy day. And instead, what did we do? We cut public education by $5 billion. There are 600 school districts in this state at the courthouse telling the legislature that they're not doing their job. So we need to address a lot of the basic needs of all Texans.
Another Senate Democrat, Wendy Davis of Dallas, suggested Perry had forgotten his place.
I think Governor Perry needs to recognize that we are a legislative body, and each of us, of course, represents constituents. The district I represent reflects the sentiment of the entire state, and that is a desire to reinvest in public education, to return the funding that was so wrongly taken.
When asked to respond, even Republican House Speaker Joe Strauss suggested many lawmakers were more likely to use the available money to shore up underfunded infrastructure for roads, water, and schools than to provide a tax cut.
There's going to be a call for some tax reforms, maybe some tax relief somewhere. There always is. But there's more of a call this time and more of an agenda that I've been trying to push to make sure that Texas can accommodate the enormous and profound growth that we've seen in recent years that will go on unabated.
Just what kind of tax relief Perry has in mind was unclear. Also unclear is whether it would get any traction as lawmakers eye the so-called surplus to pay leftover bills and to pay for services that were cut or put on hold. Shelley Koffler, KERA News in Austin.
Count State Representative Mike Villarreal among those who were gobsmacked by Perry's proposal to cut taxes. The San Antonio Democrat says Texas needs that revenue to restore education spending that was slashed 2 years ago.
Well, we know there is a leftover balance from the last budget cycle of approximately $9 billion. Mind you, that's a figure that's almost twice the amount of money that we needed to cover public education. We cut public education by $5.4 billion last session. It turns out we had plenty of money to not cut our children's education. So it's very disappointing, but it is true we have a balance of $9 billion going into this new budget cycle. Going forward, I'm hoping that we can make some smart, strategic investments in our children's education. I don't believe we can afford to provide tax cuts. We are already a low tax state. We are one of the lowest in terms of tax obligations, and we are also one of the states that has crumbling infrastructure and an inadequately funded public education system. So we need to sort of take a reality check and make sure we do what I believe Texas wants us to do, and that is cover the basics and pay our bills.
So when Rick Perry says that there are people in Texas, when they hear that there is now a budget surplus, they hear the dinner bell, and they start coming up with ways of spending that money. Is he talking about you?
I don't know what he's talking about. I think you got to give him credit for rhetoric. He's a very good politician in that way. When it comes to governing, though, I have to say he falls way short. We are a state that is large, diverse, and fast-growing. We have new Texans arriving daily. We have a very high growth rate. We have one of the largest youth populations in the country, and they need an education, and we need to educate them. But that costs money. And that means that we need to be providing for our public schools. We can't afford to cut taxes. I mean, you got to think about the context that we live in. Number one, we couldn't pay our bills last session. We had to defer payments until the next budget cycle. Number two, we're in the middle of a lawsuit where our schools are suing the state for inadequate funding. Number three, the federal government is about to go through sequestration to some degree. Either the full amounts that's currently built into that sequestration bill, where we can expect approximately 8% cut in all federal dollars coming to our state. Those are dollars that support really essential programs, like our public schools. And if that happens, then we need to pick up the slack. Finally, higher education. The growth in tuition has been double digits for the last decade. The reason is because the state legislature has decreased its investment in our colleges and universities and put families in the position to pay the bill. And so we need to cover and be prepared to cover these likely costs in our near future. We can't afford to give a tax cut because we already have a really low tax obligation in state government.
Yeah, but I like the sound of a tax cut. I like to have my taxes cut. So when Rick Perry is talking about cutting taxes, is he talking to me, or is he talking to the millionaires and billionaires of Texas?
I don't believe he's talking to the average Texan, because the average Texan wants roads to drive on, supports their local public school, wants basic, reliable services, like being able to drink water. The state has a water plan that is not funded. And so I got to imagine that he's talking to a very different crowd, because the ones that I represent and all the polls that I read on public opinion statewide suggest that we need to be covering the basics, the essential services that allow, you know, citizens to be productive and raise their families in our state.
So in the last legislative session, we had all that budget cutting going on, and here we are now into this new legislative session, and there's this surplus. It makes me wonder who's running the store. I mean, one day the cupboards are bare, the next day they're overflowing with abundance. You know, this should be managed better than that.
I agree. I think when the comptroller came out saying we had a balance of $9 billion from last budget cycle, it marked another oops moment in state government. Thousands of educators lost their jobs. Families were impacted because of that mistake in misestimating how much funds were really available. Certainly the legislature and the leadership are accountable. We could have used the Economic Stabilization Fund, what's commonly referred to as the Rainy Day Fund, to kind of hedge against the comptroller getting it wrong. But the legislature chose differently. It's unfortunate, but we need to move forward. And I think moving forward being having an accurate estimate of what our costs to educate our children are from K through college, being realistic about the cost of infrastructure from transportation to water, and properly funding those basic needs. You know what? In the end, I want this generation to do what the prior generations have done. They sacrifice to build a Texas for their children and grandchildren to prosper. And that's us. And now it's our turn to do the same.
Mike Villarreal is a state representative from San Antonio. He's a Democrat, and he's calling for the restoration of spending cuts to the state budget now that there is a surplus. Bob Williams looks at a lot of state budgets. The former legislator runs the website called statebudgetsolutions.org. He warns not to buy into the talk of a big budget surplus in Texas.
trying to find best practices and worst practices on state budgets and pension reform.
Well, I guess you have a lot to look at in Texas.
Oh, unfortunately, there's been a lot of gimmicks for years.
Here we are in Texas. 2 years ago, we had the deficit. Now we have a surplus. What does that tell you when you see such a wide swing like that? Is that anything to be learned just from that one fact?
Well, I think there's a lot to be learned. One is there's no transparency, because when you had the deficit, the way they solved the deficit was by using a bunch of accounting gimmicks that they're going to have to pay for now. And one of the big gimmicks they use is underfunding pensions. Over the last 10 years, the legislatures and governor have put $3.1 billion less into pensions than the annual required contributions by an actuary. So, you know, you can keep delaying your payments for pensions and make it look like you have a balanced budget, but you're gonna end up paying the bill.
So you were saying that the surplus that we have now, I mean, of course you're going to have a surplus if you don't pay your bills.
Right. And the other, you know, again, there's a big assumption that this federal funding is going to continue at the current level. And I don't know anybody who realistically believes that there won't be some reduction in federal aid to the states. I mean, every state has had a major increase in the amount of federal funds coming in the last couple of years, and I just don't see how that will continue to increase it or be maintained at the same level.
So what should we be thinking when we have this report from the state comptroller that we have, a surplus and we have all this money in a rainy day fund? And some people are calling, like our governor, Rick Perry, says, hey, now's a good time for tax cuts.
Well, I think you should say first, we better take a look at exactly what's happening. For example, in the last fiscal year, that data is available, 2011, Texas, of their total all funds budget, 40% of all the money came from the federal government. Now, you know, just a few years before that, it was 33%. That's a 7% difference. That's a big difference in the budget. I don't know how they can assume that they're going to continue to get that same amount of federal funds. And unfortunately, when the legislature budgets, they really don't look. They just assume the money's going to come in. They make no plans for what's going to happen if that's been down. So I think that's why we're saying there should be complete transparency. There should be on the website what the history is of the various funds coming in. And then what did they do in these gimmicks that they had last year? You know, they didn't fully fund Medicaid. And how are they taking care of that now? That hasn't been answered. I don't know what assumptions they're making in the budget. I mean, last time when they did the budget, one of the ways they had a surplus was assuming there'd be no growth in Medicaid costs. Well, those bills are going to come due. So there's really a lack of transparency in Texas's budget.
What can we do to bring more transparency then to the budget and expose this?
Well, one of the things, you know, we had urged that there be a really transparent state website. And I know Texas Public Policy has urged the same thing. Talmadge Heflin there has almost cried in vain for years to, on this budget website, put state expenditures by fund and show the expenditures by agency. This is on a public website. And show the revenue coming in by source so people can really look at that and see what the assumptions are. You know, if they're suddenly assuming a mammoth increase, or if they're assuming, hey, there's not going to be an increase in Medicaid, or there's not going to be an increase in school K-12 enrollment. So they need those key assumptions on there so the public can look at it and questions can be raised before the budget's adopted. Right now, you don't know until after the fact.
So which state has the best process of doing this?
Utah has an excellent process. Indiana has been doing very well lately. Those are two of the key states. North Carolina's really turned it around. Wisconsin's doing a good job right now. But I would suggest people really look at Utah. In terms of transparency, Kansas is one of the best state budget websites in the nation for transparency of what's going on.
And how does that help maximize what happens to tax dollars?
The interesting thing on Kansas, when they first did their website, now this is about 4 years ago, immediately they had people call and suggest ways to save money when they noticed some of the things Kansas was doing and the cost of those various operations. The public came in with suggestions on how to save money. State employees came in with suggestions when they saw some of the things. But right now it's not transparent. It's not transparent as far as where the money's coming from and where the money's going. And the key thing that's not transparent in Texas is what are the outcomes? What are we assuming is going to happen with the money?
People should have a level of confidence in the process.
Well, I don't think people have confidence in Texas budget the way it's been jumping around the last couple of years. Now, we have a big deficit. Then suddenly the deficit's fixed. People say, well, how'd you fix the deficit? I mean, taxes didn't go up that much, and you had, you know, depending upon who you listened to 2 years ago, you had a $28 billion budget deficit, you had a $12 billion deficit. and then suddenly it disappears. Now they're saying you have a surplus.
Bob Williams is a former legislator, and he runs the website statebudgetsolutions.org. Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst has one idea what to do with the surplus. He wants the state to provide money to better train concealed handgun carriers at schools. State law allows the guns in schools if a district provides written permission, but Dewhurst says the training provided for a concealed weapons license isn't thorough enough.
I'm considering the state putting up funding for extra training, because the training involved with a concealed handgun license is not sufficient, in my judgment, to have that person trained for an event involving an active shooter. The teacher might get shot themselves or might shoot a child by mistake.
Dewhurst weighed in on the growing debate as Texas Education Commissioner Michael Williams said allowing concealed weapons in schools would better protect children. The growing debate over allowing guns in schools for protection is dividing Texas lawmakers who will be considering legislation on the issue. Meanwhile, President Barack Obama's administration is expected to soon release proposals and maybe even executive orders about gun ownership in America. There's been a fever in the nation about the easy availability of guns and ammo after a wave of deadly and senseless shootings. Texas is a gun-loving land. The Republic won its independence from Mexico through grit and gunpowder. Firearms and the right to defend yourself and your family are significant parts of the state culture and identity. So many folks like Bill Titus are not taking kindly to proposals to tighten restrictions on gun ownership. Titus is a member of the board of directors of the Texas Concealed Handgun Association.
We are an association of professional instructors and permit holders, concealed handgun license holders.
So right now, the country is in the middle of a grand discussion about the future of guns in America. There's a lot of talk in Washington, D.C. in the wake of the Sandy Hook terrible shootings, what to do about guns. So what do you think? Are we good with guns in America, or does something need to change?
I believe that this entire discussion is taking the wrong focus. What we have is a person who has committed a horrible act. And in response, we're focusing on inanimate objects, and we are focusing on things that might possibly be misused by persons, instead of focusing on the simple fact that a person chose to commit a horrific act. In other words, we're making the gun the fault. And the gun did not create the situation any more than forks and spoons create obesity problems.
We've seen like a tremendous run on ammunition and guns at area gun shops in Texas and across the nation. Why do you think that is?
Because people are afraid of what the government may potentially do. And they, as individuals, know that they want a weapon to protect themselves, that they want a handgun, they want a rifle, and they want the ammunition to go with it, and they're afraid it's not going to be available.
One thing they're talking about doing, and we don't know what the actual proposal is yet, I think they're going to come out on Tuesday,
right,
is possibly background checks now on ammunition buys. Do you think that would curtail gun violence in America?
Certainly not. I don't see any way in which that's going to help.
The logic would be if there's fewer bullets available, then it would be harder to do a, you know, shooting.
If there's fewer bullets available, the logic is it would be harder for me to protect myself. The problem here is not the law-abiding citizen. The problem is the criminal. This is not going to control the criminal. It's only going to affect the person who follows the law. By definition, the criminal is not following the law.
They would be able to get bullets through a black market or something else.
Can you buy drugs right now? Go out and buy heroin right now? It's illegal, and that's what's going to happen. Anytime you try to restrict something like ammunition, you're just simply going to create a black market. The price will be driven up, and the only persons who will access that are the persons that we want not to have the ammunition.
They're talking about closing what they're calling the gun show loophole, where you can go buy a gun at a gun show and without all of the background checks that you would be required
to
do.
That is an entire fabrication. There is no gun show loophole. All laws are in place at a gun show that are in place in any other place of business. A dealer who goes to a gun show to sell a gun conducts a background check, the same as they would if you did it in their retail store. The only sales that are not controlled are person-to-person sales, private sales between two individual parties. That's not a gun show. This is an entire fabrication of the anti-gun lobby.
Well, the anti-gun lobby, what is the anti-gun lobby?
Those persons who are seeking to impose further controls on guns. It's an imaginary loophole, and it's being used to try and demonize guns and gun shows. But all laws that are present in place in the U.S. and in Texas apply at a gun show. There's no loophole that allows people to go into a gun show and just start buying guns without background checks. And anyone who believes that has clearly not read the law or been to gun shows of late.
There's also this assault weapons ban, and I know part of the debate is, you know, what is and what isn't an assault weapon. So can you help me figure out what should I be calling an assault weapon?
The technical definition of assault weapon is an automatic weapon. And with very, very few exceptions, an automatic weapon is not legal for persons to possess or to carry. Now, there are certain laws that people, hoops that they have to jump through, where they can actually have a what's called technically a Class 3 weapon. But all of the guns that are being referred to as assault weapons are not. They are simple semi-automatic firearms. That means when you pull the trigger, one bullet is fired. Pull the trigger again, another bullet. Now, some of those guns are made cosmetically to resemble, for example, an M16, which is the fully automatic military version. Civilian, it's an AR-15, which looks the same in terms of cosmetics. It's the same size. It's generally configured about the same. But the mechanism is far different. It is semi-automatic, meaning it fires one round at a time.
Do you think we have a gun violence problem in America?
No, we have a people problem in America. We have people who are out of control committing horrendous acts, and we're trying to disable their victims. We're trying to help them by taking away the means to protect oneself. The answer to the violence problem is to learn to respond correctly to violence. The answer to a bully's problem, to the problem of bullying, and these two are very related, is to enable and equip the person whom the bully picks on.
Bill Titus is a member of the board of directors of the Texas Concealed Handgun Association. He opposes any new restrictions on gun ownership in America. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past Texas Matters programs on our website at tpr.org. And you can find us and subscribe to us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.